You're listening to the Freedom Report podcast. If you enjoy our show today, subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can find us on Stitcher. If you really enjoy the show, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and a written review to help us spread the message of economic freedom and personal liberty. Now, enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. My special guest is the esteemed Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer.
A former
spy and best-selling author, Schaefer is a military expert whose views are widely sought on matters of foreign policy and national defense. Colonel, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Austin. Good to be on.
Sir, you're in the midst of something of a full-blown controversy right now after having claimed that Sergeant Bo Bergdahl will be charged with desertion. The White House appears to be backing away from these claims, trying to say that they deny them, full-blown denial. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, basically there's two pieces of what's going on. First, what you see, Austin, is simply politics as usual, to quote one of the Fox News personalities I spoke to about this recently. The White House has built a narrative. That narrative includes President Obama being very gracious in returning Sergeant Bergdahl to the United States after having traded 5 Taliban for his release. Well, it's pretty certain now, based on the information I have, that Sergeant Bergdahl will be charged with desertion. I'm aware of what's in the report done by Major General Dahl. Essentially, the facts in the report show that Sergeant Bergdahl deserted his post and that the report recommends he be punished. So that's the first issue. Secondly, you then see what goes on in Washington all the time, essentially trying to attempt to redefine what is right and wrong. The White House, within the last 24 hours, saying, Taliban, they're just a bunch of insurgents. They're not really terrorists, which is both incorrect from the fact that State Department has deemed them a terrorist organization. And a little thing called, a little guy called Faisal al-Shazad attempted to bomb Times Square. And he was trained by the Taliban in Pakistan. So I think it's interesting. The narrative, the control of the narrative is what's really at stake here. And that's what you're seeing play out right now.
The foreign policy blunders of this administration have just been onerous, and they've gone on and on. Colonel, I want to ask, do you think that it's possible, this is speculatory, of course, but that he might be embarrassed after having done that celebratory Rose Garden celebration for the return of Sergeant Bergdahl? Is that what this is about, trying to make sure that he was the hero that he sort of lauded him to be?
I don't think the president is embarrassed about anything. I think that when this White House does something, they just double and triple down. In this case, I think they're doing everything they can to maintain a narrative which is positive to President Obama. And let me be clear here. I've said, and I stick by it, that there's huge pressure coming from the White House on the Pentagon to essentially make this go away. Now, my sources on this are very consistent in what they're saying. So to me, there's no doubt that the Pentagon is basically between a rock and a hard place. So I think what you see playing out before you, especially with the Pentagon, and I feel Admiral Kirby's pain. Let me be clear. Admiral Kirby and I have been kind of mixing it up publicly, but, I do sympathize with this position. They are truly kind of in the middle of all the forces that are out there. And unfortunately, one of those most powerful is the White House, trying to maintain a completely false narrative.
Now, an anonymous source at NBC did confirm your story. They said that Bergdahl will be charged. Have you been contacted by NBC to clear up this matter?
As a matter of fact, no. As you know, I'm on NBC periodically over on the cycle, and I just haven't had time to reach out to them. They haven't reached out to me. The honest answer is I have no clue who their source is at all. Now, but God bless them. I think, based on the information I have, that's what's happening. So and also notably, they haven't retracted the story. So I'd like to believe, last time I checked, NBC is not part of a vast right-wing conspiracy, which some on the left seem to think is what's going on here regarding the Bergdahl issue.
That's what they think, because it's this is another thing where they're trying to say we're trying to blame Obama.
But yeah, that's right.
All we're trying to do is understand, make sure that they're being consistent.
There you go.
I know you praised Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Was it Elizabeth Hasselbeck for her question about, they can set a timing for withdrawing the troops, but they can't set a time for when they're going to theoretically prosecute him, if they are at all. And, yes. While that's a cute jab, I don't, my my fans don't get off on those kinds of things. They want to know the truth because they care about our troops overseas, and they certainly, right. they sure as hell don't want people coming over here and attacking us here in the United States.
Right,
and,
I get that.
Which gets me to the next issue that I really am worried about, and it's the issue of the detainees that were traded for Sergeant Bergdahl. You know, General George Washington sure as hell did not trade a private for a general. And the kind of swaps that went on during the Revolutionary War were more equal trades. It seems like, right. I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate Sergeant Bergdahl because he hasn't been charged with anything yet. You know, theoretically, he could have just, you know, wandered off and been captured. But if he was a deserter, if he was a bad guy, and we traded him for five people, what I want to know is these Taliban commanders that were released, are they currently engaged in war with the United States again?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's funny you should mention that. Right as we're doing our telecast right now, CNN has reported that one of the five has been observed by American intelligence attempting to return to the fight. So at least one of the five has actively been caught trying to basically conduct essentially acts of terror or planning of terror and try to return to the fight. So that's one of the five, speaks for itself. Let me be clear on this also. Two of the five, I'm not sure if it's the same guy or not, but two of the five were individuals which were authorized for kill or capture under their authorized use of military force, AUMF, originally put together for the 9/11 attacks, because right. two of them were involved materially in the attacks. That is to say that they helped Al-Qaeda through planning, preparation, and implementation of the plan, which then tells me they should never have been released. They should have been tried based on the way we're trying the other conspirators of the 9/11 attacks. So I don't know what this White House is doing by the fact that at least two should never have been released from the confinement they were in Guantanamo, based on the fact that they should have been convicted of crimes relating to 9/11. So simply put, this was not a good trade. It wasn't good trade. And let me say something else that I think your audience would like to hear. Some of the senior leaders, the commanding generals in charge of the war, were not informed of this trade. That is to say that they were informed that Bergdahl was being brought back. They were not told about the trade of the top five Taliban. That was handled completely separately by the White House directly. And when the time came to release him, basically the White House ordered the Pentagon to release him. And it went against everybody recommended against this inside of the Pentagon and the intelligence community.
Now, speaking of my audience, Colonel, of which there is a large and growing number of, these podcasts have really been reaching a large amount of people.
Good.
It's been very exciting. But I want to speak about them and their points of view, because, you know, when conservatives hear something like that, they say, I'm going to double down Guantanamo. But when my audience and libertarians hear something like this, we say, hey, this sounds like the failure of the policies of Guantanamo. And, you know, the American justice system, such as it is the one that everybody is so proud of, and conservatives, we're also proud of our judicial system. But for some reason, we need to create this extrajudicial system in Guantanamo Bay. Now you've recommended that we should have tried those people, those individuals, same as we have other individuals that were involved materially in the 9/11 planning of attacks.
Right.
But
right.
What I don't understand is, if our American justice system is so proper and so perfect and so pure and American, we have American exceptionalism, why do we need a secret prison off of our shores? Why can these enemy combatants not be tried in the best system in the world, brought home and given proper due process?
It's an excellent question. And let me answer it in two parts, because I think it's due a full answer. First, during World War II, there were German saboteurs, Nazis, who showed up right here on our shores. Now, there was essentially a secret trial, a military tribunal, but everybody knew about it. So it really wasn't secret. It was like, hey, they're having this secret thing over here in this building. Don't go there. The Germans were convicted, and I think seven of the 10 were murdered. I don't know. I mean, were put to death. I don't remember all the details off the top of my head. But so there is a tradition,
a precedent,
precedent for this happening regarding secret trials. But so remember that happened right here in Washington.
Well, they also put Japanese in internment camps, and my audience doesn't.
And I'm not arguing that's a good. No, I don't think. But I'm just saying that there is some level of, like, they've done it this way before. So I think that's part of the thinking. Secondly, to your point. Musawi, Zachariah Musawi, the so-called 20th hijacker, was sent through the prison, through the traditional justice system, and convicted. He will never be released.
Right.
So, and the other terrorists we've seen come up have also been convicted. So, the you could go either way on this. What I fault our government for is not doing anything. They have sat the fence. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and all these other guys have sat down there for what, 12 years now, and I fault both Bush's administration and Obama. Nobody wants to make a decision on this. And gee, last time I checked, there's no dearth of lawyers. So it's like, come on, figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so they need to make a decision one way or another, Austin. Either you go the secret route, you go the normal, but just do it. Just make a decision and stick with it. There's what, you know, you've got precedents to go either way. Just do it. You know?
There is precedence for either way. I think my audience would be much happier if we had something that was a little bit more respectful of human rights codified in the United States Constitution.
I can't dispute that.
I know it's not the kind of thing that's easy to talk about in our circles because there's such a divide in the Republican Party, which is why I'd like to get into the politics of this for just a moment.
Sure.
Marco Rubio came out recently, wrote an op-ed, and he says that for Patriot Act now, Patriot Act forever. And so we need to have warrantless wiretapping of American citizens because when one child does something wrong, we must punish the entire class. We need to sacrifice our liberty to maintain our security. Is that the case?
Let me be clear. We talked about this before, and my argument is the same. You know, if you're looking for seven bad fish in a lake the size of maybe, one square mile, it's a lot easier to do that search for seven fish in a one square mile lake because, there's a certain percentage of folks you're going after. If you're looking for seven fish in the Atlantic Ocean, your chances of finding a seven fish are totally infinitesimally small. You will not find the seven fish. So what he's arguing for essentially is this mass indefinite collection of everything, which nets you nothing. Anybody who puts this forth as a concept is unserious in their understanding of the issues. The technology is such as you can be very precise within a certain target group and, dare I say, profile the group you're really interested in. Collecting information, Austin, about Mama Leone's spaghetti recipe when she sends it from Cousin George to Cousin George in Minot, North Dakota, it ain't of interest. There's no reason to collect that. Yet that's what he's arguing for, that, oh, we just want it, just in case. You don't need it. It actually gets in the way of you doing your job if you're an intelligence officer. So it is both a spurious argument from the legal perspective and the technical perspective. So I don't know why people, like Rubio, I would have thought better of. But this, the whole idea is totally insane.
Not me, Colonel. I would not have thought any better of that man because he's so often proved himself to be an enemy to the principles which me and my listeners hold dear. Those principles of individual liberty, constitutional republicanism, and limited government. I'd like to get back to the politics there for just a moment because, and here's the thing, I have my own biases, Colonel, but I'm fair. I want to be objective, And the thing is that when I look at the Republican presidential candidates for 2016 and then I, contrast them with the Democrat field in terms of foreign policy, I identify more with a Rand Paul type of a guy. But what I'd want to know is out of all of the Republican presidential candidates that we have right now, do any of them have a realistic foreign policy to you? Do you trust any of them with foreign policy? Because it's very difficult when I look at someone like Senator Mike Lee, for example, or Senator Ted Cruz. They have a good understanding of constitutional law, but sometimes constitutional law isn't going to save you from the Taliban or from ISIS.
Right.
I want to know who in this Republican presidential field has a good understanding of foreign policy, someone that you would trust on foreign policy matters.
Right. Well, to begin with, Senator Cruz, I have high regard for, and truth be told, I've talked to his staff. So that tells me they're receptive to new ideas. I've actually talked to Governor Perry from Texas.
Hmm.
I think the one thing, Austin, it's necessary for any candidate is to be open. One of the things I noticed in the Romney candidacy is that he had this little inner circle and you couldn't penetrate it. And I know a number of Reagan Republicans who I think were very respectful of your perspective. They weren't Ron Paul or Rand Paul, but they were Reagan Republicans with a good idea saying, hey, we need to do things differently. And they never got through. Right. So I'm very critical. And I've actually told Governor Perry to his face, you don't want to do what Romney did if you run again. And I'm just letting you know. And I don't think Governor Perry would have a problem with saying that.
No, no. The constitutional conservatives, the limited government Republicans who come at this not as much from an intellectual perspective, but perhaps from a cultural perspective, they're going to tend to identify with the Rick Perrys and the Ted Cruzes.
Right.
The more radicals, the Thomas Paines, the revolutionaries, the hardcores, the crazies, the kooks, like me, we're going to fall more, of course, into that Rand Paul, maybe slash Ted Cruz.
And look, I don't get me wrong. I've talked to Rand Paul's staff. I admire Rand Paul. We're friends on Facebook. There you go. And I think there's a lot of good things he has to say. I'll say this about his approach. I think he's got a better approach than his dad. Don't take this wrong, because you know I'm personal friends with Walter Jones. Walter is a great guy. I love Walter. Walter endorsed Ron Paul for president. Right. So, you know,
they're more doves. They're doves.
So I consider them dear people, and I respect their position. I try to support their position. Mm-hmm. With that said, I think we have to look at realistically what the lay of the land is. And I'm not one of those for expeditionary military, use of military force. I think we are far too often using military force when we have other options. So this is where I think a Rand Paul has a really good understanding of, like, let's look at other options before they use the military. And
understanding that things like ISIS is a threat, you know, like an understanding, right. That we don't want to have a Benghazi on our embassy in Iraq.
Right.
A lot of libertarians, who the hardcores, the Ron Paulers and things like that, have been giving Rand a hard time because he's a little bit more realist on that. But it's sort of shaped my views in a sense. I get called a neocon simply for believing in a national defense, but I'm not an anarchist. So what can you do?
Well, I don't know if you knew this, Austin. Mm-hmm. When I debated Ron Paul on John Stossel's show when he decided to run for president a few years ago, I was called by the Ron Fox folks a very bad person. It's still on the internet, so you can look it up.
I think that a lot of people have a terrible misunderstanding of you. I mean, they do. And I always try and promote you as often as I can, Colonel, because, you know, it's nice to have someone who has an understanding for how poor chisels the military can be for carving out better tomorrows. And so I think that I respect your views, and I sense a skepticism of big government from you.
I don't like big government.
Even though you've been a dirty spy.
Yeah, well, thank you for recognizing that at least. No, I'm a Reagan conservative, and I do respect the fact we have to have small government accountability. And for goodness sake, Reagan pulled us out of Lebanon before things got really bad there. So, Reagan himself recognized that we needed to be careful about when we do expeditionary things, because we don't want to get in the middle of things we either can't win or should not be involved in. So that's my perspective. And fundamentally, and going back to the warrior ethos for a second, a true warrior never seeks to fight. He seeks to do everything in his power to prevent a fight, maintain his strength, and then only after everything else is exhausted do you engage in warfare, which could lead to blood and death. I wish we had more of that ethos in most of our military, and that's one of the things I do pursue through my contacts with the military academic community.
But they would always say to you, "Well, if you desire peace, you must prepare for war."
and I don't disagree with it. I think you have to be prepared. Hopefully, the whole idea is to be prepared, but hopefully never have to do it.
Well, one of these days, when Rand Paul is the president, we're gonna have a national debate, and we're gonna talk about hiring free market military contractors to assassinate terrorists. But until that day comes. Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, thank you for being on the show today.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. Also good to be on.
Have a good one.
Thank you.